finally went to 7 that you've been chasing for a while.
We've been very close many times. Everyone kind of looks at it like, oh, it's that easy. Just put another pound of boost in it or turn the boost up. I'm like, listen, the boost has been turned up since 2010. We went 8:07 at World Cup, losing a tire at 7.5 seconds into the run. World Series of Pro Mod, I go 8:01 with the shootout early. It's been there a bunch of times. We find out we got a broken turbo gas. We ended up hurting an engine. So I started calling around. I asked the guys from Cecil County, like, hey, are you guys doing any kind of testing tomorrow? So we went down there. Car leaves. I could feel it left a little like hot. Quick second. I know it's spinning through second, whatever, you know, running through the gears, get back 8:02, 193, almost like 193 and a half. This is the setup run we need for that pass. Go back, whatever. We look at it, pull a little bit power out on the launch, calm second down a good bit. No one wants to say it, but we know it's there. Do our burnout, go up, stage the car, let the clutch out, and the car just leaves. And I could feel that it left good because it like threw me into the seat. End the run, pull off, picking up the chute. Then a guy goes by on a scooter and he's like, yo, man, congrats. I'm like, what did it go? He's like, I don't know, man, but your crew was over there. They were jumping around, so it must have been something good. So they hand me the slip. I saw the 795. It was just basically the perfect run.
And today's guest, a sport front-wheel drive champion, the newest member of the 7-Second Club, the world-famous Ricky Silva.
What's going on, guys?
Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's good to be back. You know, a little bit different role this time around.
Finally in your own podcast.
Yeah.
Let's give our listeners and viewers an idea, quick background of yourself. Our friendship goes back probably 20 years.
Yeah, just about, give or take. I would say.
And, you know, obviously a lot's happened from where we started to where we are now. Let's just give a brief rundown of how you got into racing.
You know, kind of like you guys, had a older brother that was into cars and, you know, started bringing me around. I kind of turned into the younger kid hanging out with the older crowd, you know, using that as my excuse to get out of the house because my parents would let me go out if I went out with my brother and his friends. So, you know, he had a EK coupe that we started doing some stuff to, kind of started hanging around those guys a little bit more. That's where I met Cunha. You know,
what year was this, Ricky?
Like 99, 2000. So I was still in high school, going to street races, you know, kind of tagging along pretty much. You know, ended up getting a DSM as my first car, and just kind of before that thing was even registered and insured, it was already like a low 13-second car back then. You know, we kind of just came up from there, just been doing this for a long time, was started, started working at CLM part-time in like 05, and I was working at the dealer as a dealer tech and doing that part-time. So, you know, kind of always been around it, always had like involved in a lot of different projects and builds. And, you know, over the years I've had I worked for GM Racing for a couple of years during like
that.
That
was with Marty, right?
So I worked for two separate teams. I worked for my first stint. The first year I did it was for a guy named Brian Jimenez. It was like a hot rod class Cobalt. But there at the time, NHRA had hit them with so many rule changes. They basically like those cars couldn't compete in hot rod with all the rules that were against them. So GM decided we're just going to put big turbos on these cars and go race pro front wheel drive with where there wasn't a lot of cars. So I started off doing that basically. You know, got like an on-the-job interview, went down to Virginia, worked for a weekend, and pretty much was told, hey, listen, there's a job here for you if you want it. So I did that part-time. Then the following year, this was 07, the opportunity came to move on to one of the bigger cars in the GM camp, the guy Marty Ladwig, which it was a true tube chassis car.
Mm-hmm.
Tube chassis.
That's a pro car.
A real pro front car. So tube chassis, slipper clutch, X-Track transmission. Mm-hmm. It was, for me, it was opportunity to learn more. And I also got a little bit of my feet wet doing some of like the track tuning on that car. Because some of the engineers that were involved in that program were like, listen, like we kind of got to step back. We're going to teach you what to do. So I did that for a couple years. This was probably, you know, right towards the end of, you know, NHRA, the Sport Compact stuff folding. And, you know, it was kind of back and forth, doing a couple different things, helping out Cunha at the shop, doing some, you know, helping out with customer cars and projects and stuff like that. And then probably like 2009, 2010 is when it turned into like, oh, maybe I should build something of my own. I still had the talent, but at that point, it was kind of like to take the next step with that car was going to be a very expensive one, which hindsight is 2020. It's been a lot more expensive since then.
Because you already had a
Ricky,
car.
Real quick, so you said your first race or drag racing car was a DSM car. Like, why did you pick the DSM car?
The bang for the buck with those cars back then was like, you couldn't touch it. Those things with
turbo upgrade,
not even a turbo upgrade. They used to have these things called like the free mods where like you modify the boost solenoid, you remove like some honeycombs on the mass air and the thing would pick up like almost 100 horsepower. So like I said, that thing, my first time ever going with the track with that car, went 13.5, which, wow, you know, back in 2002 or so was fairly quick. So that was one of those things where I always love those cars. I still do. I'm still a fan of those cars.
So you say those cars, right? So DSM, there's the Eclipse and there's the Talon.
Yeah. So I had a 92 Eclipse. Okay. Then eventually I did like, you know, the Talon bumpers on it. So it looked a little bit different, but yeah, you had your 1G DSMs, like your 90 to 94 Eclipse, Talon, Laser. Then the 2G stuff was like 95 to 99, I believe. And then, you know, now you have Evos and stuff like that. Never really got into the Evo market. I was kind of already out of it, but it was more, I was around the Honda stuff so much. And it was one of those things where the experience I had working on like the pro levels, I kind of saw things that I'm like, man, like we could do this better. We could do that better. And at first, when you make these suggestions as a guy with no race car, everyone's like, yeah, whatever. Like, you don't know what you're talking about. I'm like, okay, so kind of got to a point, couple years went by. It was like probably like 09. Buddy of mine had an EK hatch that he was driving to work every day. And we started talking about it. And he's like, oh, I'm thinking about selling it. So we kind of went back and forth. And I was like, listen, if you sell it, I'll buy it. So end up buying this car off of him. This thing was a complete running car. And started, you know, working on it little by little. Started getting, you know, getting it ready. We did a cage on it.
Swapped already?
No, it was bone stock.
Bone stock.
It was
okay.
A bone stock commuter car. I actually did the timing belt on that car when it was
just
bone
regular
stock.
Yeah.
So started working on it, started, you know, got the cage done, started getting some parts together, you know, used some connections that I had to get certain things that I needed from, you know, shops and companies we worked with. So little by little, we started building this car. So as the word was getting out that I was building this car, every now and then I would get like some critique, like, oh, what do you plan on running with this car? And I was like, ah, you know, I think it should go 950s. And they were like, oh, wow, like those are like big goals. And I'm like, well, I know this car, such and such as car, went 950 with this much power with this type of setup. This should do something similar. Like, okay, so come, you know, 2010, first couple times we went to the track, went nines right away with the car, like within doing my license passes. First big event we go to is World Cup Finals 2010, first time ever. First pass off the trailer, we go 931. So it was like, blew our goal of going 950 out the water. Then we ended up going like 927, which at the time on a stock transmission was, there wasn't like many people doing it. I think like DP had been like 30s or 40s. So like at the time, that was like the stock trans record. So, you know, it was one of those things where it got us a little too close to like, man, maybe we could run eights with this car. So then we kind of started, you know.
And at that time, like bring it back too, that car still had like regular doors.
Car was 100% street car.
Yeah, I was going to say stock fenders.
Exhaust.
I remember you still had like the slicks were hanging out, fenders and everything.
I ran 920 with
sheet metal, like sheet hood, all that.
I ran 920 with it. We brought it back to the shop and I pushed three tires on it and drove it home to take it to the garage. Like it was still insured, registered, full glass interior. It was like 2,500 pound car, like no major weight reduction, all that stuff. So, you know, it kind of was one of those things where that car was, that build was initially kind of like to show people that like, if you apply the things correctly, like you can make it run fast. Cause we went quicker than a lot of people that had a lot more stuff than what we had, but we were just applying it correctly. So, you
know, how did you apply it correctly? Because usually in order to get that quick, usually there's a formula already that you kind of follow, but it didn't seem like that.
The thing is, there was a lot of formulas out there already. There was a lot of good information out there. You know, going back to like the forum days, because this was around the forum days still, there was a lot of good information out there. The thing is, people weren't using it correctly in a sense of like some guys, this is where you start implementing the mentality of sometimes less is more. And we started doing that with just the amount of power you need, the amount of power management you needed at the time. Stuff like that. So we were able to get it to go fairly quick with not a lot. Like if you saw what the car had back then, you were like, oh man, like this very basic setup.
And what class was that back then that you were running?
So when I originally built that car was built around what was the True Street rules, which obviously, you know, True Street for World Cup only went away like a year or two ago.
Yeah.
But it was a 67 millimeter car, you know, just a usual Golden Eagle block, JE pistons, like, you know, the usual built basics, motor.
Yeah.
What engine management was that?
That was on an AEM V2 at the time. So that was 2010. In 2011, we struggled with what we thought were electronics issues. And then we ended up all of 2011, like we fought, we had all kinds of issues. We thought it was electronics issues. Eventually in 2012, we put the car on Motec. We were just like, you know what? We need to rewire this entire car. If we're going to spend the money rewiring the car, we might as well put the best on
Change the manager.
So we put the best on it. We go out and we're still having these weird issues, which later come to find out it was a fuel issue we were having with the fuel we were using at the time wasn't really designed for what we were doing with it.
What kind of fuel was it?
It was a VP C23, which C23 is a nitrous fuel. I had called VP and asked them like, hey, this is what we're trying to do with this. Can I use this? And they're like, yeah, you could use that. No problem. But then kind of find out later on that fuel's not really designed for what we're doing with it.
Yeah.
So we, all kinds of headaches. So finally, like.
What was the breaking point where you guys actually figured that out?
It got to a point where we were so conservative on the tuning and the thing was still blowing head gaskets, bending rods. Like, we're like, man, like there's no way, like something is not right here. So it got to a point where like, you know what? Bunch of other people are running this other fuel, the VP import at the time. Let's try that. We tried that. We put the car on the dyno probably like 9:30 at night on a Friday night. Saturday morning, we went to Englishtown for Spring Nationals. We ended up going to the finals and running up at that event. So we knew right away, like, all right, that was our problem. So then we started trending towards that. We ran that fuel for a while. We changed some things up on the car. You know, 2012 was like a roller coaster year for us because like, it was like the highs of highs and the lows of lows. Like we won our first event, which actually was sponsored by Eat Sleep Race. It was an H-Day event at Englishtown. We ran eights for the first time that year. And then in October of 2012, the car catches on fire. So we're like, damn, like right, like a month or so before World Cup. So it's like, damn, like what do we do? You know, like. There's a lot of stuff on the car at that time that was like the harness was all custom front end. So it was like, all right, what do we do? So at the same time that this is all happening, we get hit with Hurricane Sandy. So the shop has no power, you know, where I'm trying to work on it like during the day when I can, when there's like light outside and stuff like that. So we were able to like, through some help of some companies we were working with and some of our friends, we were able to get the car together and running for World Cup while pretty much putting the car together with no power. Like I remember
no power, no fuel,
like nothing. Like
around here it was bad.
It was really bad. So Joel from Race Spec came down Wednesday night. We wired, like he had the harness made. We put it in the car, wired it, got the car running. Like I want to say at this point it's Thursday morning now, probably like 5 a.m.
And this is still the old shop.
This is still the old shop in Newark.
Right.
So we get the car running around like 5 a.m. Fired it up. Do all our systems checks. Everything looks good. Like, all right, no problem. I went home, took a shower, went straight to work. Worked that day, came home. We rolled the car into the trailer Thursday night and drove straight to World Cup. First pass off the trailer, car went like 890 something. So we're like, all right, cool. Car's back in form, you know? But it was just like one of those roller coaster events, like where you're like, man, like this is insane. Like there's just, you know, we went from having a great year. Like it started off rough when we were having like these engine issues and stuff like that. And then all of a sudden now we're back on course and then it's like, here's another curveball. Like,
so then now is this car in its current form now, or is it still not really there yet?
It was still progressing. you know, this wasn't a purpose-built car like some of the cars you have now. It started off as like more of a calm street car. Then little by little, we started, you know, at this point, it already had the wider front end on it and certain things like that. Still had stock seats, still had pretty much most of the interior to this day. But it was still the biggest upgrade at that time was the engine management. Like we were probably around here, we were probably like one of the first, maybe second cars on Motec.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe like some of the big tire outlaw guys had Motec earlier on. But besides that, we were probably one of the first on the Motec stuff. And it worked well. It did its job and it's still on the car today. So it just goes to show how good of an ECU it is.
And that's what?
The same.
So from 2000.
Same exact ECU. Wow.
2012.
Same exact harness that Joel made for the second time because the first one obviously got burned up.
Yeah.
Same, you know, me and Joel kind of, we always joke back and forth because every year it pops up on Facebook and he's like, oh man, he's like, you know, good times. He's
the
like,
memories.
He likes to call, you know, the Motec is the gold box. So he likes to call it Gold Faithful because it's technology that's really old by today's standards, but it's still
rocking,
works really, really well. It does what you want it to. So, but yeah, that was kind of like that point, you know. In between like the GM stuff and building this car, I did some drifting stuff with Gary Gardella and those guys, kind of the tail end of their drift stuff where mm-hmm. they had just built that Camaro with Turk, which you guys had on earlier this year. They took his old car and hired another driver, a guy from Ireland, this guy Eric O'Sullivan. And, you know, Gary one day hits me up like, hey, I need a guy to crew chief this car. I'm like, listen, I don't know anything about drifting. He's like, oh, I don't need you to. I'm like, I have people there for that. You just gotta go there, look at some data, make sure the car's not blowing up. I'm like, okay. So we go to this race, you know, this Drift of F Road Atlanta, first event of the year for us with that car. We go down there, goes out testing, crashes the car. I'm like, I'm thinking we're done. They're like, oh no, we're gonna fix this thing. I'm like, what do you mean? Like, oh no, we'll straighten this thing out, we'll weld it. Me and Dom, that's where I was working with Dom, of you guys, mutual friend of ours. And we sat there, we got this thing up and running. Sure enough, like it was like one of those things where like I got the full experience the first time out. So we did that for that year. Then the following year, Gary ended up selling the whole team. So that was kind of just, you know, what I did there.
And you were doing all this while you were still dealer tech.
So I started at the dealer in 03. I was there till 2016. I was there for 13 years. Started off as like a regular oil change kid. Worked my way up to when I left there, I was a MDT, which is one of the highest levels you can get in Toyota. It's a master diagnostic tech. But I was still part-timing at CLM, like pretty much on and off for since 05.
Right.
So once I left the dealer in 16, I went to go work for CLM full-time. So that was right around the time where Cunha moved to Woodbridge. He was, you know, he knew that he needed a full-time guy. He wanted to try to expand the business a little bit more. I was getting to a point where I was just getting tired of the dealer life, the instability of paychecks and all that stuff like that.
Making hours, dealing with dumbass.
The flat rate system is just not good, you know, especially now everything is warranty. Everything's a recall. So it's hard to make money.
Yeah.
So it was just kind of the perfect timing. I was like, you know what? If I don't do this now, I don't know when I'm ever going to do it again. So kind of took the leap of faith and been there ever since. So and now it's, you know, 2025 will be 20 years total of me working there, like nice. Between part-time and full-time.
That's crazy. Time flies. It's
been a long time.
You said, I'm going to rewind again. How did you end up working for GM? Like, how did that all?
I had a friend at the time that was working on one of the teams and whatever, we in conversation, like I had always expressed interest in wanting to do it. You know, I was young. To me, it was like, hey, got to travel and go racing, right? You know? So at one point, he was leaving one of the teams and he's like, hey, these other guys are looking to hire somebody. I can't do it. Are you interested? And I was like, yeah, sure. So I basically got like an on the job interview, like where they're like, hey, we're going to go to Virginia for this NHRA race. Meet us there. Right, no problem. So we drove down to Virginia, worked. I told them, I was like, listen, I'll come. I'll work for free for the weekend. If you think I'm worth it, then give me a job. So I went down there. Before the end of the weekend, the team owner had already pulled me aside. He's like, listen, he was like, there's a spot on this team if you want it. He was like, you know, we need a guy like you. I'm like, all right, cool. So it was a cool experience. Got to learn a lot of stuff, got to see a lot of things, you know, worked with some really top tier people that I still am friends with today that work in GM, Cadillac Racing, that are still involved in all kinds of motorsports in different genres of motorsports. So I, like, till this day, still talk to those guys, kind of one of those things every now and then where it's like, hey, I got this crazy idea, let me bounce it off somebody. You know, they're there for that. So we still talk every now and then with a handful of them, but they're, you know, they're still all out there. They're still all doing different things. You know, I know when you guys had Ron on, he talked about Vince, and Vince, I see him at, like, you know, PRI, and we'll chit chat and go back and forth. But yeah, those guys have, it was one of those things where it's like, it's like a relationship that's always, it's like a number that's good to have in the Rolodex, basically. Like,
yeah,
if you need something, or like, hey, I got this crazy idea, who can make it happen? Or do you know a guy for this? Guarantee that somebody knows somebody. So that's how we kind of got involved with that. And like I said, we did it for 2.5 years or so, basically from 06 until the series kind of folded because NHRA went away. Then NOPE took over. And then the NOPE NHRA like conglomerate thing, that thing didn't last too much longer.
Did you see that on Instagram, that 2025 NOPE?
I think it's just a car
NOPE,
show, right?
NOPE had NOPE had a party at PRI last year.
Did they?
Yeah. So
why were we invited?
Everyone was invited. We just didn't go.
Oh, we didn't go.
It was bought, from what I was told. I actually was talking with Norris. Norris was saying that somebody from the Midwest bought it. They were trying to do some no prep, very heavily scheduled thing, like back-to-back-to-back-to-back weekends.
Like IFO.
Middle of the summer, kind of. Basically, yeah. From what he made it seem like, from what they told him, is they basically bought it for the name. But haven't really seen much since then. So
there was a post the other day.
Was there?
It popped up on my feed, but it didn't say much. So I was like,
oh. Yeah, it's going to be hard. I mean, I looked at it. I saw their page. There's like 300. They have 300 followers.
There's
only people that understood NOPE are going to remember that. And all those people that remember it are probably our age and older. So,
yeah. And honestly, nowadays with camera phones and social media, you can't do anything of what NOPE used to do back then.
Yeah.
Nah, NOPE was wild.
NOPE was crazy. When those NOPE parties tour. after last dark. Qualifying on Saturday, those parties were insane.
The NOPE Nationals was probably one of our first traveling events that we
I never got to do that, but I heard that was crazy.
Like, there was everyone stayed for the bikini contest. I'll tell that.
That was everywhere.
And they had it on this big ass stage. It was like a concert.
Yeah,
basically,
those are huge.
I remember seeing pictures in, you know, back then I was still younger, so seeing pictures in the magazines and stuff like that. But even, you know, the NOPE Racing Series, when they were around, you know, they had a good following and they had a good thing, you know. But same thing, it was like the lifestyle side of it was like wet t-shirt contest,
yeah,
foam pits, jello wrestling, like all kinds of crazy stuff.
So so you know, you've been through the, I want to say, through the years of seeing the culture, you know, back then we called it import drag racing. I think it's lost its name. It's just really just
more compact
drag racing.
Point, yeah.
Well, what's your point of view of like how we progress and where we are today from back then?
I think obviously, I think a lot of the reason that series kind of went away a little bit. Obviously, the NOPE thing, I know that some of the Myers, the brothers, passed away. I'm not 100% sure if both of them did, but definitely one of them I know for sure. But the big thing behind NHRA was Wally Parks. Wally Parks saw that this is the future. These little Hondas and Cobalts and whatever else was out there, these sport compact cars, these younger kids that are coming up, this is the future. We need to cater to them. As soon as Wally Parks passed away, Sport Compact Series went away because the higher ups are kind of out of touch. And you could kind of even see that today in their, how they struggle to deal with the Pro Series sometimes and some of the missed opportunity they leave out there with some of their marketing and content, where I feel like we have a pretty good footprint in the sport right now where the way things are going, it still could be better. I think we suffer right now from a lack of unity amongst the series, the promoters, the tracks, the racers. There's definitely a little bit of that, you know, as you can see, you know, obviously in the Northeast, we've taken some pretty serious blows the last couple of years with losing Englishtown.
Tracks closer.
You know, last year we lose ATCO. So it's a little rough, obviously, for us. We were spoiled. We had two major tracks, you know, major staples of racetracks in within, you know, an hour of where we live. Hour and a half. Or ATCO's an hour and a half. Englishtown speed 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've taken some blows with that. But as far as, like, the sport itself is doing really well. You see, you know, you talk to different companies, businesses, everyone's doing well. So people are still spending money on this stuff, you know, like even during COVID. During COVID was probably some of the busiest times. You could ask any shop, they'll tell you they've never been busier. So, but it's kind of trending the same. We just need a little more unity in that aspect and kind of look at the end goal as opposed to like the dollars and cents right now, you know, like try to look at the bigger picture of the sport. And I think that's where we kind of are lacking in this industry, you know, but it'll come, you know, just kind of the players kind of come and go, the racers come and go, but the sport's not dying. There's still people racing. There's still people going out. They're still building cars. So I don't think, you know, I don't think we're going anywhere anytime soon, but, you know, I guess we'll see.
So I know you just hit your, a big milestone in your racing career. You finally went to 7 that you've been chasing for a while. So give us a little bit about why, what happened. You know, I know you had a canceled event.
Mm-hmm.
Car was already prepped, so I know you took some time, like, fuck it, let's just go race.
Basically what it was.
Do some testing. Yeah. And everything aligned for you, so.
Yeah, we've been very close many times. Everyone kind of looks at it like, oh, it's that easy, just put another pound of boost in it or turn the boost. I'm like, listen, the boost has been turned up since 2010. There is no low boost. But it's just kind of making all the stars align. Like I said, back in, I think it was 18 or 19, we went 8:07 at World Cup, losing a tire at 7.5 seconds into the run. So click fourth, driving along, and all of a sudden the steering wheel gets light, and you're like, oh, shit. I already knew what it was, and I'm just like, all right, not getting out of it, but what's going to happen when I lift? So whatever, kept the car off the wall, no major damage. I'm like, you know, kind of annoyed, like, damn, you know, sucks it happens. Crew shows up, like, you know, you're good? Like, yeah, like, you know what it ran? I'm like, no, they're like, you went 8:07. I'm like, of course, on like a great run, something like this happens. So we go look at the data, and we're like, that was it. That was the run. So chase that for a couple years. Then, you know, you go back like 2 years ago, one event we were going like, we had to race 8th mile because it was so windy out, and we were going like 5.
Where was this?
At ATCO. We were going like 5:40 to the 8th, but it was super windy, so they wouldn't let us run it all the way out. So I'm like, these are 8th miles that are capable of running 7th. World Series of Pro Mod, I go 8:01 with the shootout early. So I'm like, it's been there a few times, you know? In Port Revival last year, we go again, 5:40 something, car has no top end. Keep turning the boost doesn't go up. So
found out the
cracked intercooler. So it's been there a bunch of times. So then last year at World Cup, we, you know, World Cup's always tricky track conditions for us, so we struggled. We stayed over Monday to test that World Cup. So we stayed over for the Monday test. First run, forgot what we went. Second run, the car goes like 8:04 or something like that. So we're like, all right, this is the setup run we need to make the changes. All of a sudden, now we go out there, the car doesn't want to leave. So we keep giving it more and more power. You know, as the weather changes, track tightens up, sometimes you got to give it a little bit more. But we're at the point now where we're like, we put enough power on the starting line that this thing should do a burnout the minute you let the clutch out, and it just won't leave. So we get back, start looking. We find out we got a broken turbo gasket. So I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I'm like, it's always something. So get back from World Cup, fix that with the hopes of still hitting some kind of testing tune. Tracks are closing. Obviously, we don't got ATCO. So around here, you basically got Maple Grove and you got Cecil County. They're both closing already. So I'm like, all right, whatever. I literally did not touch that car since World Cup until I got it ready for this year. Didn't change anything on the car. Didn't move an ounce of weight around, nothing. Brought the car out. Went to Honda Day. Track was not there. Basically, we went to H Day with the same 8.0 tune-up that we went at the test session with. So I'm like, if the track's there, this should go 8.0. Click third gear, it's doing a burnout. Click fourth gear, it's doing a burnout. I'm like, track's not there. So we made a couple changes. We ended up hurting an engine because of it spinning so bad and getting up on the limiter. We ended up damaging the head. So didn't qualify for the race, sat out, got back. We fixed the car. So now it's in poor revival. We were watching the weather. Weather's looking a little sketchy. We're like, this is not looking good. Like, we're not going to be able to go racing. They end up canceling the event. So now, like you said, we're sitting at home Thursday night. Like, car's ready to rock. We're not supposed to be at work tomorrow anyway, because we're supposed to be at the track. So I started calling around. I asked the guys from Cecil County, like, hey, are you guys doing any kind of testing tomorrow? Because usually they'll do stuff during the day on Friday. So I think when they saw that that race got canceled, they added that test session. So we went down there, same thing, kind of looked at everything, looked at the data. We're like, you know what? Put that same Q1 tune-up from H-Day in and see what it does. Go. Car leaves. I could feel it left a little, like, hot. Quick second, I know it's spinning through second, whatever, you know, run it through the gears, get back. You know, I figure it's probably like an A1, A2. Because I'm like, it did spin second a little bit. You know, Cunha comes to get me with Tim, hands me the slip, 802, 193, almost like 193 and a half. I'm like, holy crap, like, it's the highest mile an hour we've ever been. Highest mile an hour we've ever been in the eighth, and went like 152 or something like that. So I was like, okay, I'm like, this is the setup run we need for that pass. Like, yeah. We know if this did that, we just got to make some small changes and it's going to go. Go back, whatever. We look at it, pull a little bit power out on the launch, calm second down a good bit, go up there. You know, now it's kind of like that thing where, you know, like, no one wants to say it, but we know it's there.
Yeah. Right?
So like, all right, go do our burnout, go up, stage the car, let the clutch out, and the car just leaves. And I could feel that it left good because it like threw me into the seat. Bang second and it rips through second gear real quick. I put third and I'm like, all right, like, this is on a run. Just get it through the gears, get it slowed down. Like, don't mess nothing up. So at this point, whatever, end the run, pull off, picking up the chute, and my phone starts going off. So I look at my phone, and it's Farrell was on the starting line. He's oh, congrats. I'm like, damn, what did it run? Because they had the boards off that day, being that it was like they were doing no time and time stuff, but they were like kind of just shorter staffed. So they were just like, listen, just the boards are going to be off. We'll call out we'll give you slips and call it out on the starting line if you want. So then a guy goes by in a scooter and he's like, yo, man, congrats. I'm like, what did it go? He's like, I don't know, man, but your crew was over there. They were jumping around. So it must have been something good. So now I'm sitting there like top of the track by myself. Like, what did it run? So then these guys pulled up and I'm like, how good was it? And they're like, so they hand me the slip. I saw the 795. It had dropped a little bit of mile an hour, went 191. But what caught me more by surprise was the short track. It like went 139, 60 foot, which is the best we've ever been. And it went 360 something, 330, which is the best it's ever been. So it was like, holy shit. Like, it was just basically the perfect run. Like, it just left perfect. Didn't touch none of the traction control, just was dead hooked the whole way down. So it was like, that's the run that we've had there for how many years now?
Chances.
It's just literally getting all that stuff to be perfect and line up. You know, and it also just goes to show what happens when you put it on a good track, because the track over there, Cecil County's got, their track prep is just, it's very friendly for front wheel drive stuff. So it's really good, but it's also not
too aggressive.
Like World Cup, we struggle between it's super tacky and it's also really cold out. So it makes it, it's a real hard surface to manage, where Cecil, it was like a night, it was a nicer day. It was a warmer day. It was like 70s. But it's just like the way they also prep is very, it works really, really well for the front wheel drive guys. So, you know, we were happy. You know, it was kind of like one of those things, like, finally got like the monkey off our back, you know. So now we're just getting it ready for, you know, the next races and see if we can try to go replicate those runs elsewhere. Now we got data that we know what a 7-second pass looks like, and we can sit there and, okay, let's
work off that,
tweak this, tweak that, and see, can we make it better? Because Our back half, so from the eighth mile to the finish line on the 8.0 pass, it went 256, which on the seven second pass, it went 257. So if I put that 256 on the front half of the other pass, it'll be a 789. So we know that possibility's out there now. So now it's like, all right, here's the new goal.
Yep.
So, you know,
let's give never ending. No. Let's give the our listeners also a rundown. Like, what's your setup? What is the engine setup, turbo wise? Like, whatever you can disclose. You know,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's honest. A lot of the stuff is, you know, as people know, some people always think, oh, like, nah, these guys are running like one offs and stuff. Not a lot of that happening anymore.
No,
not as much as in the past. But yeah, give everyone like a brief rundown.
It's honestly, it's all pretty much shelf stuff. The B series, you know, we run a Golden Eagle sleeve block, JE pistons, MGP rods. Golden Eagle does like the machine work for us. I assemble it myself. Cylinder heads are from BZE down in North Carolina, which used to be years ago RLZ. So we run their cylinder heads, SuperTech valve train, webcams, again, all off the shelf stuff. Got the intake manifold. We run kind of like a custom turbo kit. It's like a old sheepy manifold with a custom intercooler. Power nowadays, there's only really one choice, Precision Turbo. You know, they're 73 next gen R. So it's one of the, that's like the latest and greatest, which these turbos nowadays are, they're a blessing and a curse, because every revision that comes out makes more power. But if you don't have the engine combinations to support it, or if your engine isn't set up properly for that amount of boost,
it's not going to work.
It's not going to last. And, you know, we've been blessed to work directly with Precision and some of these other companies that we mentioned, you know, JE and some of our other engine part companies that really help with developing like a whole package that works well and stays together. I'm not a fan of the home run ball of racing, where you go out there, swing for the fence. If you knock one out, it's great, but then you're putting an engine in at every pass. I don't like racing like that. I rather be a tick slower than everyone else, but not have to work on my car every weekend, every single pass that we're out there. You know,
I think so, I know what also helped the sevens though.
What's that?
The new wrap.
The new wrap definitely helped. You know, we got Competition Clutch on board this year, which is kind of a conglomerate from the Wharton Automotive Group, which is the parent company of McLeod Clutches. So they bought Competition Clutch. They're kind of doing some brand shifting over there. So we decided to put, you know, everything, all the sport compact stuff is going to end up transitioning into that.
Yeah, from the McLeod lineup.
Yeah, so
move over.
Basically going to be buying the same stuff that we used to have, just it's gonna
under
be
a new name,
a different name.
Shout out to Krista Baldwin, Paulie.
Yeah, Krista, Paul, all those guys, they've been very instrumental in our success the last couple of years, you know, since awesome. they've been on board. They've been extremely supportive. They've listened to feedback. We've done some product development together, and you know, things are looking good for the
Yeah, we did a podcast with Paul, and he talked about family. He's like, Chris is my family. Ricky's my family. Like,
Paul's a good dude, man. Paul's a Jersey guy like us, man. Yeah. So he's, you know, there's that little bond there. So
yeah, it's good to know that your sponsor thinks of you like that. Like,
yeah, I was honestly taken back when I heard it myself, when I heard the episode.
Oh, you had to.
I was just like, man, I was like, that's cool. You know, from somebody, a successful businessman like that. Obviously is successful both in business and in racing. They're having a killer year too this year with their car.
Yep.
You know, and even just like even Krista, like just kind of bouncing ideas off of her sometimes and getting their feedback on things. You know, they're very nice people. They're very great people to work with. Like, yeah. I feel fortunate to work with a company like that.
Oh, that's definitely, yeah. I feel fortunate to be friends with
Ricky
them.
Ricky is a avid podcast listener, and he listens to all the podcasts. We have a group chat on our phones. They'd be like, yo, listen to this one. We're like, damn, Ricky's like, he's up on his podcast.
I'm like an information whore. I like to learn a lot about all kinds of different things. Like, I listen to podcasts about, you know, I obviously like to listen to like Joe Rogan's podcast. He's got everything on there. So you could find whatever you want on there. But I listen, obviously, your guy's stuff. I listen to other different motorsports, shooting podcasts, stuff about barbecuing and cooking. Like, I like to listen. I read tons of books. Like, that's the other thing. Like, that was kind of a hobby I picked up during COVID, where I started reading a lot of different stuff, like anything from a just entrepreneurial stuff, business podcasts, stuff like that. But I just like to know a lot about everything, because it's one of those things where you don't know what you don't know. So, you know, you might say, hey, I listen to this guy. He does these. I do the same thing they do. They do it. We have the same 50 out of these 50 steps. 49 of them are the same, except that one was a little bit different. And now you're like, oh, you know what? I never looked at it from that point of view. I like that. I'm going to do it that way now, or something like that. You know, like, same thing. Like I mentioned, I think when we had Rolando on many episodes ago at this point, about like the tuning, like, you know, the tuning school stuff. Right. And I said, oh, you know, I have a high performance academy course, and I do. And I've watched that stuff sometimes. I listen to it or watch videos. And it's one of those things where like, all right, yeah, I know this, I know that, I know that. But
you're going to get that one little tidbit.
You know, you're like, oh, I like that. That's a cool idea. I never thought about it that way. Or you get to see someone else's point of view on things, and it expands your knowledge, you know? And that's the thing, like, again, every day learning something new. And that's, I kind of want to keep it that way. Like, I always try to learn as much as I can from peers or from people that are doing better in even business and life and racing. You kind of always look up and see, like, you know, what could I take from this level of motorsports, you know? So it's always one of those things, always trying to learn something new. And like nowadays with, you know, everyone has podcasts. So it's like the information is just endless out there.
Flowing.
You know, podcasts are like the new forums of back in the day.
Right.
You know?
That's true.
So back to the racing stuff, engine-wise, in the Hondas is either B-Series or K-Series. Obviously, you're a B-Series guy. You never really went to the K-side. But obviously, you still work on a lot of K-Series cars. What's like the pros and cons of the two engines, and especially for like drag racing setups?
So the B-Series definitely, for a long time, was just way more developed than the K's, because they've just been out for so long.
Yeah.
There's so many parts for them. Overall package, the B-Series transmission for a long time was more reliable, and I think it still is. The K has a lot more moving parts. It's cable shifted. Their shifter mechanism's a little weird. So if you're not on top of all these little moving parts and one of them starts to break or wear, it's going to wreak havoc on everything else. And most guys are going to be like, oh, this gear broke. But they're not looking down the line at it broke because the shift fork's been bent for 6 months now. So there's a lot more moving parts there. So reliability-wise, the Bs, I think, were always a little bit a step ahead. As far as engine versus engine, the K is a far superior engine. Obviously, if you look at the naturally aspirated all motor world, you cannot beat that engine. Those cylinder heads are unbelievable. It's a bigger engine to begin with. So it depends. For like a turbocharged application, if you're running a class limited turbo application, the turbo is going to be the limit. So if your turbo is only capable of 1,000 horsepower on a B series, it's going to take you 50 pounds to make that 1,000 horsepower. Where on a K, it's only going to take 40 pounds to make the 1,000 horsepower.
Because of the head.
Because that it flows so much air. So it's one of those things where in max effort applications, like rear wheel drive stuff now, like you're seeing become popular.
A lot of people do in
K. The Ks are popular because they're standard rotation. They're not reverse rotation like a B series. So you got a lot more transmission options. Mm. In the sport front wheel drive world that we're in, the B series is still king. You know, the Sentra is there too, which is another platform that has shown some potential. But in our world, in the Honda world, B and K, the B is still superior when it comes to that. I think that the Ks have a couple little flaws to them. The rod bearings on them are really, really thin. So once you start making big power, they start to beat up rod bearings. So that's why you see a lot of guys will do what's like a 2.2, where they take like an S2000 crank or even like a BC crank or one of these aftermarket cranks that runs a different rod bearing, different rod combination. So they're a little bit more, there's more longevity there. But like I said, cylinder head, valve train wise, the K is definitely superior. The other thing, that is becoming a big problem with the Bs is finding parts. So right now it's getting to a point where you can't find GSR blocks. You can't find GSR heads because they were only made for those certain amount of years in that one model car.
Yeah.
So it's getting really, really hard to find where, you know, now there's some billet options, some blocks. I know there's some rumors of some heads coming out soon. So we've got some stuff that's coming down the pipeline that I think will help. But, you know, they both kind of got their spot. Like if you're doing an all-wheel drive car, the K is definitely like in stock form. K all-wheel drive is the way to go.
Yeah.
The trans is way better compared to the B series trans. So there's like, you know, they all kind of have their spots. But if you're trying to build like an all-motor car, K series is the way to go.
And they got some what, like those nitro all-motor cars.
Those nitro all-motor cars that
flying.
Nitro is like a power adder. So
right, I get it, but still.
Yeah.
They're moving.
They are. They're, you know. I know they haven't been out in a long time, but, you know, those guys down from Florida from Faster with that silver coupe, like, that thing went like 8-0 or 8-1 like 3 years ago, and no one's come near running with that car, right?
Yeah. But
that car was kind of like the anomaly of the Nitro class, but there's a bunch of guys, I think, going 50s and 60s now pretty reliably. The thing is, the Nitro stuff is still very finicky. So it's, you know, it's no different than a Top Fuel or a Funny Car. You know, they blow those things up left and right. These guys are no different. They're still figuring it out. And it's like the Nitro is affected by so many different things that if you're not on top of all those little details, you can go out there one pass, it's good. And the next pass, it grenades and you don't know why. And it's because the weather changed a bunch and now the tune-up was completely different.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit more, a little more finicky in that stuff. That's why I think you kind of seen it. There was a rise of it for a while. Now it's kind of, I feel like it's kind of tapering off. But it gave guys with smaller setups a shot because you could take a little stock motor, put nitro in it. You're competing with the big dogs.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of guys that did that who had like little bullshit setups, like stockish setups. They're like, I don't care. I'll dump nitro in it. It'll run hard. If it blows up, I'll just go buy another stock motor, put it in and go run it again. So you get that. But yeah, the nitro stuff it's cool. It's definitely, it's not for me. All motors, not for me either. You know, like I appreciate it in the sense of I appreciate what it takes to refine your setup in all motor. Like obviously I have tons of customers in the all motor class,
right, yeah.
You know, that run our pro bearing stuff. So, you know, we appreciate everything they do for us. It's just seeing what some of those guys go through sometimes for one or two horsepower. It's pretty insane, but
yeah.
Takes dedication, takes money. You know, that's why usually the guys that are running really fast are the guys that are refining the entire setup.
Right.
It's not just about making power. Because I know plenty of guys who make the same horsepower the big guys make, but the cars aren't going anywhere because they don't have everything else. You know, the power's a good chunk of it, but those last 10% that are left in the chassis and suspension and gearing is where it's really,
that's where you're going to make it up at. You know, yeah. Not just about power.
If you look at a pro stock car, you know, in NHRA, those guys are changing ratios every single round. They're making their final clutch adjustments underneath the tower, judging off of what they saw in front of them. Like, did these guys go down the track good? Did you shake the tires? What did it do? And they're in there making, and I didn't know it was like that until, you know, when I got to work on the NHRA side, we raced a couple of the national events and we're under the tower. And I'm like, why is the guy, like the driver strapped in and the crew chief sitting on the floor in the passenger seat still making clutch adjustments? They're like, oh no, they'll make adjustments right now. And then if there's a, let's say there's an hour oil down and the weather swung 10 degrees, they'll go back in there and make adjustments again. Same thing with the fuel guys. You'll see the fuel guys messing with the clutch timers and the fuel timers and stuff like that. So, you know, all motors similar, where it's like all that stuff has to work together for it to be fast.
For it to run.
You know? So, where turbo cars are a little more forgiving in that sense. But now it's getting to a point where I feel like the turbo class is starting to bunch up a little bit more. And I think it's good because like that, it pushes the competition. It makes it more of a driver's race. It makes it more of a, you know, who could keep their car together for four rounds or five rounds on Sunday. You know, there's been a lot of races that we've won and other people have won where by simply they got their car to the starting line five times in a row on Sunday. No one else could do the same.
Just being able to pull up.
You know, so, you know, you got to be in it to win it, as they say, right?
Yeah. With all the experience and knowledge that you and your team have now, if you can go back, or not go back, but like currently in this in present day, if you were to build, because obviously your car wasn't a purpose-built race car.
No.
It was a street car that just got more stuff added and stuff taken out of it.
Constantly progressed.
And knowing what you know now, what would be your perfect setup for the chassis wise? What chassis would you choose? Would you still do like you still do a Honda? You want to do something else?
Well,
knowing what you know,
if I were to build another Honda, it would definitely be more of like the cars that are being built today, where they're basically a full chassis car, just about, with shock towers and floor pans welded back in. Like if you go look at some of these new cars that are being built, that's basically what they are. They start off as a cage and then they start stitching the body back on it. And like that, you can build a car as light as you possibly want. And then once the car is done, you could put the weight exactly where you want it, which is what some of the top tier cars in the class are becoming. And some of the cars, the newer cars that are being built, that's what they're becoming. You know, years ago, there was a few cars that were kind of built like that. And now it's slowly been progressing more. Like the newer cars are kind of seeing what they did and they're doing the same thing. But there's still not a lot of cars left, like my car and even Cedric's car. Like Cedric built his car, but it's kind of progressed and added on over the years. Like I've literally been racing the same exact car since 2010. I haven't taken a season off since 2010 and been racing that car every year. And every year there's some kind of change being done to it. But if we were to build another Honda, it would probably be a coupe of some sort. Either, I don't know about EK. I think the EG coupe has a little bit better aero from the factory. I think the drag coefficient's a little bit better. So it would probably be an EG coupe with, you know, similar type of thing where, you know, you're basically doing building a cage and chassis and you stitch everything back on it like these other guys are doing. But honestly, if I were to build a car today, right now, the car that really has intrigued me and caught my eye, and I'm sure a lot of people have caught their eye because this guy's like literally been winning everything recently.
Think you're talking about Brett?
That guy, Brett Lasala's car. That Mustang is insane. Like, and I know the guy who tunes that car because he actually used to tune Gary's.
Yep, I know Job.
Pro front car.
Yep, Turbo P.
Yeah.
Mustangs, yeah.
So Joe, like I talked to Joe and I'm like, dude, like that car is insane. Like, and he's like, yeah, he's like, I was like, I wouldn't even want something that quick. I would want something like a high 6 second, low 7 second car. Like I basically something overbuilt that I could race that thing every weekend and not have to work on it.
And he did like sick week with
it. He won sick week.
Yeah, he won it and he drove it.
The car's been like 620s or 630s. It's been 399 in the eighth. Like the car's insanely fast. Don't get me wrong. It's reliable. They work on it. They do work on it. They take stuff apart and check it and maintain it. And they look over things and, you know, see, okay, what's the limit? What's going to be our next limit? Where's the next fuse going to be? Like, all right, I think he was on some podcast. He said that they're kind of getting to the limit of the block. The head gasket sealing is kind of starting to become, like, they know if we push the boost past a certain amount, these problems are going to start showing.
Yeah, they're going to start coming apart.
But Job was saying, so I didn't know they used to have another car like that, the Snot Rocket 1.0, which apparently was a low 7 second, high 6 second car. He said, he's like, that car was like basically like almost like a street car. And that thing would just run all day. He's like, I would like something like that because it also opens up the, you can race in a lot more places.
Right.
So especially for us, the front wheel drive stuff, we're a little more limited where we can race, where the rear wheel drive classes, there's a lot of classes.
There's a lot of races.
There's races all over the place. The only thing that would be tough is that, you know, we don't have spare parts for something like that. So you would be starting 100% from scratch, where with the Honda stuff, we have, you know, we've been doing this for so long. We have spare parts. We have, you know, all the little stupid knickknacks that sometimes you don't think of, but some of these Honda things, you can't even get this stuff new anymore. So it's like, if you have, like years ago, we used to throw out like some of these like mounts and brackets and stuff that now it's like, man, like
those are
I needed
now.
This bracket. I had to go pay $100 for this thing. And I threw out 20 of them like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, one of those things that would be a tough starting point, but that car definitely is super impressive and it's caught my eye. And I was like, if I were to build something like that, I would want something like that. You know?
So we're going back on your wins, and obviously with the CLM camp, you guys know we always talk about the internal rivalries. Mm-hmm. So obviously, it's you and Fast Guy. So mm-hmm. now that Fast Guy's B series, you finally went to 7.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's his turn.
It is, and honestly, that was kind of one of the reasons behind him going B series,
right? So you guys can help each other,
because you know many years ago we had, I don't know, 10, 15 cars in our camp. And then over the years, it's kind of dwindled down and there's only like 3 or 4. But then out of those 3 or 4, I'm the only one that's racing all year. So at the end of the year, when this guy brings his car out, he's got a year's worth of data to go off of that he didn't have to work for, basically. So if you look from the outside looking in, you're like, oh man, this guy, every time this guy's car comes out, it goes faster. It's like, yeah, because he's getting everything we just learned for the last 6 months. Put on his car, now it goes quicker. Meanwhile, we went up and down and up and down and spent money on this, tried that. And at the point where we were at in the sport front class, out of our camp, it was basically just me and Fast Guy. But Fast Guy was K and I was B. So at the time,
stuff doesn't correlate.
It doesn't. Like, some stuff kind of is the same, but like, you can't launch the cars the same because the motors are not the same. They don't have the same torque.
Right.
The gearing's not the same. So it's like
a lot of variables.
Where my car, you know, if we got to launch my car at 7,500, he could probably launch his car at 7 grand because it's a bigger motor. The gearing's tighter. It's got a lot more torque. But the way we run my car through the middle of the track, you can't do the same with his. So it's like you start going into those things where like the data doesn't 100% translate. So at the time,
not apples to apples.
It's not. And as much as everyone's like, oh, just take his map and put it in his car, it's like, it's not the same. Like the cars, even the difference of the coupe to the hatch is different. The weight biases are slightly different. You know, suspensions are different, stuff mm-hmm. like that. You know, kind of gets to a point where it's like people sometimes think that, oh, it's all the same. It's like, it is, but it's not. Because there's these little details sometimes that you won't think. Like, oh, you know, this guy went from a... this size head gasket to this size head gasket. Oh, it doesn't make a difference. But then all of a sudden the motor starts staying together. They just think, oh, it's something else. Like, no, it's that little difference in head gasket makes a difference.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was like stuff like that. But we were at the time, going back to when he first was thinking about it, we were building a car for a customer. And that customer was basically a replica of my car. Couple better parts here and there, but basically a replica of my car. And we had told them at the time, we're like, listen, if you want to hit the ground running, you need to buy this stuff. And I was like, or if you want to do it kind of your way or with whatever parts you want to use, there may be some growing pains. But I know if you do it this way, I can guarantee you the car will run this. Kid's like, nah, I want to hit the ground running. I want to be out there running at the top with you guys. Okay, this is what you got to do. So at the time, Fast Guy was kind of like entertaining the idea. And I told him, I was like, listen, this is the best thing you would do for the both of us. He's like, oh, what do you mean? I was like, because I was like, if you switch your car, now that's my car and your car with the same exact setups, we'll try to make them as close to each other as possible. I was like, and then we have this other car that's eventually going to come around. I was like, that'll be 3 cars of data to work off of. And, you know, he was like, oh, I never looked at it that way. So then like, I don't know, one day he calls me. He's like, I think I'm really going to do it. I'm like, what do you mean? He was like, oh, I already sold the trans. I already sold this. I'm like, oh, you're being for real. He's like, yeah. And then sure enough, he was like, hey, listen, came down one day, dropped off some parts here, start putting a motor together. Send this, get this sleeve. What do I need? Who do I got to start ordering parts? So we started putting an engine. So basically our cars are all the stuff that makes a difference in how the cars respond and behave is the same. So same intake manifolds, same cylinder heads, same cams. Bottom ends are the same. He uses one brand of piston. I use a different brand of piston. Same compression. What else? His turbo manifold is slightly different. He's got a Gatto manifold that's V-band. I still have a T4 manifold. But same turbo, same wastegate. Suspensions are just about the same now. Like, so it's one of those things where and when his car first came out, B-Series, the first time he ran it, they were at Atgon, like a cold November day. The track wasn't there. It went like 8:30s. First track, good track, we put it on, the car 180 or 81. Went 100,
Florida.
Yeah, 190 plus right away. So the right away. And it's like, look, like that you follow the recipe, you're right there with what I've ever, the best I've ever ran, right? So he hasn't been racing as much as we have lately. But now obviously, you know, he won H day, car's right there. And me and Cunha said it, we're like, if he was here that Friday when we went, his car would have won sevens too. 100% it would have won sevens. So now it's just a matter of getting him out there. Obviously, you know, it's coming into the summer months now. I don't think anything's spectacular is going to happen at Pan Am in July. It's going to be July. It's going to be hot. Maple Grove conditions could kind of be hit or miss. But, you know, he's talking about possibly going to MIR next in like 2 weeks or something for this event that Norris is organizing. Mm-hmm. So if he does that, I think it could be there. I don't see why not, you know, like it's just again, put all the pieces together, you know? So, but it definitely helps when you have multiple cars.
Yeah. That's,
you know, cause sometimes I get, you know, oh, hey, what do you think about doing this? Try it out. Let me know how it works because I'm usually the guinea pig.
Right.
You know, and there's been a lot of stuff that some of our team cars have benefited from over the years and even customers of stuff we've learned on our cars just from experimenting where it's like, you know, we've spent thousands of dollars to figure out that information that when a customer comes to us now, that information is available to you. You know, obviously if you're a paying customer to us, we're going to give you our best that we can, you know, right? A guy sometimes, you know, before we ran this, like, oh, what do I got to do to go sevens? I'm like, I don't know, but when I find out, you'll know because we haven't gone sevens yet. What are like that type of car? So we haven't gone sevens yet, but now that we know, like, all right, this is what you got to do, you know? So same thing with like when we did the all-wheel drive stuff. All-wheel drive stuff kind of started off as like, you know, we were learning as we were going and we were testing the limits of stuff where kind of where when we took the break after the Section 8 crashed, it was at that limit of like, now is where it's going to start getting expensive because now you're talking about custom this, billet that. So by the time we came back out, all that stuff was already available.
Yeah.
So it was a little bit easier. But yeah, like when we first started, it was like a learning experience.
You know, Section 8 held its weight on the list for a very long time.
For a very long time.
I think it's still on the list, right? Mm-hmm. Or just got bumped?
I don't think it's any lower than like 12 or 15 though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's...
Even the new car was kind of in the same. It kind of got on right around there. It was a little bit slower. We also didn't...
The new car
never really got pushed as much as it should have. It was just kind of one of those things where just, I think it was kind of past its point. We were kind of like already over it.
Yeah. You know? Time.
You need
to have the time to put the testing
in. It is. And
again, that's a lot of learning curve for you guys.
It is.
And now you're messing with parts that you guys never even used.
That, and it's like you said, having the time to do it because when the old car was built and it, so everyone remembers the old car when the original Section 8, when it came out, started running fast. And if you talk to Steve, he'll always say, he's like, oh yeah. He's like, everyone was making fun of us and talking shit the year we went to World Cup and the car was a different color. And it went like 10 feet and broke the drive shaft and broke a bunch of the parts. Everyone talked shit. And there's a lot of guys that have talked shit whose cars are now all wheel drive and are fast. And it's funny seeing that because it's like, you know, no one saw that. No one remembers that. They remember when the car went fast.
Right.
And it went fast. And that car was ran a lot. They would take it to the track all the time, a lot of testing tunes just to try to get it dialed in to get it to the point of where it was, you know?
Like, yeah.
And it was one of those things where it was just like slowly chipping away at it because we didn't know what was going to break.
No.
Like, that car literally had factory everything. And everyone's like, there's no way. I'm like, dude, that thing had a factory untouched viscous.
Factory
axles, diff,
yeah,
everything,
say.
Transfer cases, everything was 100% factory. It had a carbon fiber drive shaft in it when it crashed. We had just gotten like one of the first DSS carbon fiber drive shafts, and we had just put it in. And then like a couple weeks later is when the car got wrecked. But it's like, you know, that car was, you know, a learning experience in itself, and it's like there's no data for that car at the time.
No,
that was all, you know, figure it out as we go, you know. So we've, you know, having multiple cars definitely helps. And that's where some of these other shops and tuners, I think, have an advantage when you have five or six cars to outside days off of. And then it's like, hey, this suspension worked on this car, put it on your car. you know, put weight here helped, do it on your car, you know. So when you start learning all that stuff and you start to see it, then you can see where it'll progress. And it's at that point with us now where, you know, it's just me and him racing at this point, me and Fast Guy. So we're going to, you know, see just his car's next at this point. It's just a matter of hopefully he doesn't go through the trials and tribulations I went through. And like we were right there where it's like we ran a bunch of other 8.0s and 8.1s. But I think if we get that car on a good track, there should be no reason why.
No, that's good. That's good to hear.
We didn't talk about you were on a TV show.
I was on a TV show.
I don't think anybody remembers that. Let's talk about that.
So that was like an interesting kind of thing where I got a random call one day and it's like, hi, I'm such and such a producer for Motor Trend. I got your number from Cole from Speed Factory. We're doing this show. We want you to be on it. I'm like, okay, what kind of show is it? I can't tell you. I'm like, okay. It's like, oh, we're going to email you some paperwork, fill it out, and then we'll give you more details. So it's like Monday now. I get an NDA sent to me. I fill it out, get a call back on our conference call with them. Like, yeah, we're doing this show. It's going to be 8 and 9 second civics. We want you to be on it. I'm like, okay, where's it at? Who's it for? They wouldn't tell you where it was at because they said that they couldn't tell you where it was at because of if they told you the location, they had to take this. If they actually named the location, they had to take this like crazy extra insurance or something. So finally, whatever, a bunch of back and forth. They tell us the day of the shooting and it's like to start shooting the Monday after Fall Nationals. So Fall Nationals, obviously you guys are local. It's in usually first weekend of October, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, hold on. I was like, where is this? They're like, oh, it's in Florida. I was like, we're racing that weekend up in Jersey. It's like, that's fine. I'll have a car carrier at the track waiting. The minute you're done, car will go to Florida and you fly in the next morning, the car will be there. And I'm like, that's fine. I was like, I can't guarantee the car is going to be in one piece. She was like, oh man, you know. So we were kind of back and forth. So at one point I'm telling Cunha about it. And this is at the time we had the blue all-wheel drive street car. And he like kind of said it jokingly. He's like, oh, why don't you take the blue car? And I'm like, ah, whatever, like kind of blew it off. Then I'm like, damn, like I really don't want to pass up this opportunity because like I think this might be something cool. So whatever, I'm like, hey man, like you serious? And he's like, oh yeah, you know, like at first he's kind of like, where's the car going to be? How's this going to work? All this stuff. So I sent, because they knew my car. They knew what my car looked like. They wanted that type of car. So I sent them pictures of the blue car. They're like, that car is perfect. Bring that one. So they call us. They're like, hey, we're going to send a transport down to come pick up the car. So, all right, car came. They picked it up like probably like 3-4 weeks before this taping. So we go to Fall Nationals, which turns out to be the last Fall Nationals. We didn't even know it. We fly out to Florida first thing Monday morning, like 5, 6 a.m. flight. When we get there, there's a bunch of cars there, people we knew. So it was a couple guys from Honda, a bunch of West Coast guys. Couple guys from like Honda in California, and then there was like the KKT guys were like their real street cars. So there was like two sport front cars and a couple, you know, like mid-level street cars, some all motor cars. So like when we're walking up, these guys had already been there since Sunday, so they were all hanging out. So when we're walking up, they were just coming out of like some safety briefing, and they're like, "Oh, here come the winners," and we're like, "Ah, yeah, whatever." Like, you know, saying what's up to everybody. So we're at it's at Kennedy Space Center is where we were, on the runway where the space shuttle lands. So we go out, whatever, we start doing like some B-roll footage with the car. And, you know, I told Cunha, I was like, listen, I've never driven this car. Just turn it down a little. Let me get acclimated with the car. So you're on like, it's like a grooved, so it's like, it's concrete. It kind of looks like when you're coming up to a toll booth. So it's concrete, but it's all grooved, like lateral grooves. So we pull up, whatever. I launch the car, like bogs and goes, launch it again, it bogs. And he's like, man, he's like, this thing needs like all the power in it, like at the track. I'm just going to put the track map in and just hold on. It should go. All right. I launch the car, run it up through the gears. I turn around, I come back. Everyone's around the car. They're like, holy shit. Like, where did this thing come from? They're like, wow, this thing's insane. Like, completely caught everyone off guard.
But did they know that car was all-wheel drive at the time?
They did know. So okay. I told them what it was.
Well, they knew, but I'm talking about the competitors.
Yeah, the competitors knew because that car was already all over the internet at that point.
That's true.
Because so when they called us, when they originally called me, they wanted to do, the only thing they told us was like, hey, it's going to be an event that's sponsored by Honda. Continental was one of the sponsors. They wanted us all on street tires. And I'm like, you talk to who? And they said, what, on street tires? Like, someone else agreed to this? Like, there's no way. I was like, you understand that if we put our car in like fourth gear and step on it, it'll literally do a burnout on a street tire? Like, yeah, we know. I'm like, that's not even safe. So then it was kind of one of those. Then afterwards, you find out they're like, listen, we just had to pitch you guys the ideas, get the rejection, and then we'd go back to the producers and say, no, this isn't going to work. So whatever, we kind of went back and forth. Their only stipulation was it had to be a Honda Civic and something in the 8-9 second range. So we get there, whatever, we're doing all the B-roll stuff. This is Monday. So Monday was like the test day. And, you know, they're kind of going back and forth, looking at all the cars. So the host of the show, the name of the show was called Modified. So they did this episode was basically like the world's greatest drag race edition of Modified, where if you've ever seen where they do it with the supercars, where mm-hmm. it's like 7-8 cars wide going down the strip, this is basically what they were doing. So we go, whatever, that was Monday. So now come Tuesday, we're getting ready, like set up for this race, and it starts raining. So we're like, all right, like, what are we doing? They're like, oh no, like, this is going to happen. I'm like, what do you mean? Like, it's raining. They're like, oh, just give it a little bit. It'll clear up. This stuff dries quick. So they like rented like a serious helicopter. Like, I got videos and pictures of it still. A helicopter to fly around and do shots and whatever. So their biggest thing was like, listen, just don't jump the light. So we're like, okay, like, where's the light? So they had like a production SUV off to the side. We were all mic'd up. So they counted down in our, like, we could hear it in our helmets. And then they flashed the lights, let the clutch out, run it up through the gears. I like look back. I don't see anyone nowhere. And I'm just cracking up to myself. I'm like, yo, like this is literally like an ass whooping. So turn around, get back. And Cunha's like, dude, he's like, it wasn't even close. And I'm like, what happened? He's like, dude, the all motor cars were probably the closest ones. He was like, this guy, I think, broke a gear. This guy, like, something happened. He's like, but dude, he's like, it wasn't even close. So we're like, all right, cool. So they come over. The guys that were next to us were from like the West Coast. Right away, they were like, oh, give me the break and we'll do it again for money. And I'm like, okay. I'm like, at that time, the blue car was an 8-8. It went 8-8 on street tires.
Yeah.
That car went like 8-8, 8-9 on slicks back then on its like best day. Like, did you not just see what happened? Like, you want to run for money? No problem. So right away, like the KKT guys are like, oh, we'll put up money. I'm like, hold on. I was like, let us get our bets in first. So we talked to the production people. They're like, listen, if we have time at the end, you guys can do whatever you want. She's like, but right now we got other stuff we got to do. So we're like, all right, fine. So then they kind of like everyone went back. And it's just me, Cunha, and Tim was with us from eRacer. And we're out there by ourselves. So we're like, all right, like, what are we waiting on? Like, oh, we got to do the trophy presentation. Like, okay, so what are we waiting on? Like, we've been out here for like an hour. Like, oh, we're waiting on the marketing girl from Honda to show up. But she's at the badging office. So that place,
super tight security.
If the badging office is closed, you're not getting in. So she gets her badge, which finally she shows up. So they're like, all right, now mind you, we're in the middle of a 3.5 mile runway. So if you take that can of that Omni energy drink and put it down in the middle of the runway, you could see it. So you're looking around, you can't see anything. Like, I don't see nothing anywhere. So they're starting to do the interview with me. And I found it weird that the one host, the guy Jeff, was doing the interview. Cause I feel like the hosts were Jeff Stoneback mm-hmm. and Matt Powers, which were both like Formula Drift drivers. But Matt seemed more of like kind of like the lead guy. And I was like, man, it's weird. Like, why is Jeff doing the interview? Like, where's Matt at? So they're sitting there and they're interviewing me and they're like, oh, you know, congratulations, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, oh yeah, so here's what you want. And as he like turns me, a car pulls up and it's this 2017 Civic Sport, which come to find out, they've been building this Civic on the show the entire time. So it had like suspension wheels, like Flash Pro, a couple little minor bolt-ons and stuff. But now it's the end of the show. They got to get rid of the car. So the car was the prize. But they wouldn't tell us that. And I'm like, where did this car come from? And then it's funny because like we look back now when they were doing the interview, like Cunha and Timmy were behind like the production people. And the producer kind of like grabbed them trying to distract them so they wouldn't see the car pull up because they're like, they didn't want to ruin my reaction.
Right.
So I'm like, holy shit. Like, there's no way. Like, we won a car. Like, what the hell? So yeah, that was basically it. Like we end up winning this car. We do a bunch of stuff with it. I still have the car till this day. So, you know, kind of just sits now, but it's got like, you know, the same stuff done to it, wheels, a couple That's little awesome. Minor things.
And you never knew.
But what happened to that? What happened to the race for the money?
It never happened. We ran out of time. It never happened. We ended up running out of time. We almost all got in trouble because those guys ended up at some point during the initial race. Somebody went live on Instagram because somebody had gotten a text like, hey, I saw some video of some race, and then it disappeared. And then, I don't know, we got back. So we were there Monday, Tuesday. We got back Wednesday. And like Thursday, I got an email like, hey, like, thanks all you guys. I wish I was writing an email on different terms. But basically, our production people saw this, something popped up on the internet. And you guys need to, you know, be aware that you all signed NDAs. You're all under contract. Like, we could push legal action for this. And it's like, we're not going to go after you for... We're going to go after you for the cost of the entire production. And whatever we thought we might have gotten in from views, you're going to pay for that too. So right away, it was just like, man, like, I hope these people don't ruin this shit. So like, this was October. The show didn't come out till December. So and on top of it, they shipped us the car like right away because the blue car was getting shipped back. They're like, listen, if we have space in the car carrier, we're shipping this thing too. So I had that car sitting at the shop for like, I didn't register. At the time,
so you weren't allowed to drive it until
I didn't have the title for it yet.
Oh,
so that car was originally was registered to the production company, but in the meantime of them transferring the title to me, Discovery bought the production company. So then it became the title's got to get flipped into Discovery's name first and then into your name. So it dragged. I didn't register that car till like the end of January. And it was one of those things, just like, man, like, what's going on with this? Like, what's happening?
I
can't even drive this thing. Like, you know, for a long time, we couldn't really talk about what happened. Like, a handful of people knew, a couple people that, like, really close to us knew, like, hey, I'm going to show you this video, but you can't tell nobody. I'm not sending it to you. So it was one of those things. But it was definitely an awesome experience. Like, I made a joke when we were down there. The producer from that show is, like, well, she was originally from Pennsylvania. So we were kind of bullshitting back and forth. And I told her, I was like, listen, like, I think with the group of people you have here, I was like, this episode's going to be a big success. And she's like, you think so, this and that? And I was like, listen, I was like, I'll bet you money that this show has more views than your entire series combined. And she was like, oh, that's a bold claim. I know the crowd we have here. I was like, I think you'll be all right. So that show went over 1 million-something views like in less than a week.
That episode
went like 1 million+ views in a week. I think I looked at it recently. It was like in the four or five million or something like that.
So what happened with the whole like NDA? Someone went live.
So basically one of the guys that was there went live on his Instagram while they were taping the act. The race was one shot. So it was like, listen, we're going to run this race.
And that's it.
That's it. Winner take all. That's it. One shot and that's it. So someone went live, but I know they didn't have a big following. But someone saw it and I guess told someone else and
got in trouble.
Word got back through one of the guys that was there. Like they were kind of like, yo, like, did you hear? And somebody in the production people heard it and they're like, hey, listen, like, I think somebody tried to like leak something. So they kind of gave us that warning and it was like, listen, like, don't post nothing on social media about it.
Oh,
don't talk about
it.
They told us right away, like, listen, don't even open your mouth until the episode comes out. And they're like, just so you know, every single one of your social media accounts is being watched right now. So just be on top of it. So they're like, all right, cool. So for the most part, after that whole thing, everyone kind of was pretty good about it.
Warning,
it was a warning, but it was one of those.
Warning.
It was a stern warning because it came from the producer's
boss.
Guys
in black suits will be knocking at your door
and they got
your soul.
You got to remember, this is Motor Trend you're talking about.
Yeah,
this
they got
is Discovery
money.
You're talking
deep pockets.
About. These are people that have agencies on retainer to do this type of work, like copyright work and stuff like that. So it was one of those things where we're like, I was just more kind of upset because I'm like, I don't want them to ruin it because
give us a bad name.
Yeah. And then it's like, oh, we got to cancel
and
this
you
series.
Want a car.
And I, yeah, like, oh, what do I get the car back? You know what I'm saying? Like all this different stuff. Yeah, so it
sucked.
Was one of those things where it was just kind of like, for that first week or two after we got back, it was kind of like, all right, then people almost forgot about it until the episode came out.
Yeah.
Then when the episode came out, because the KKT guys, they were from Florida. So they didn't come to Fall Nationals because they were originally booked to go do that. And a lot of people kind of like talked shit like, oh, why don't you guys come to Fall Nationals? Like, what could be better than racing at Fall Nationals?
And they couldn't say anything.
Because I think the purse that year was like something decent, might have been like 10 grand or something like that. So it was one of those things where people were kind of like suspicious, like, because you were prepping for this race and then all of a sudden now you're not going.
No.
So people were questioning it. But I think at the time they might have, you know, they were sponsored by Real Street. I think Real Street might have told them like, hey, like good opportunity. Like I would take it. So, but it was cool. It was definitely, you know, the episode's still out there.
Yeah.
Episode's still out there. You can search it. World's Greatest Drag Race. It's like one of the first hits that pops up on YouTube. And, you know, we still get every now and then I'll get tagged in it. And, you know, people are like, oh, man, you remember this or I can't believe you guys did that. But it was a cool experience. It was a cool experience. And again, another contact in the book, you know, like every now and then I'll get a random message like, hey, looking for a car for this type of shoot. Do you know somebody? You know, like so it's always, you know,
good
networking thing, you know.
Hey, I got real quick. Take a look on your left side. There's a box there. Yeah.
So this ESR Future Race Car Driver box set?
Yeah, so you know, you have a daughter, beautiful daughter, baby daughter.
Baby, a little, not a baby so no more. She's like 13 months now.
Still a baby in my I got a 10 and a 7, so I'd say she's still a baby in my eyes, but I believe you've had that book. Know, what's your thoughts on it?
I think it's one of the most awesome things that you guys have to offer. Honestly, this is a good thing for the kids coming up, and it's, you know, you could do your ABCs with them, your numbers, your colors, and it's also the thing of just kind of getting them into the, you know, kind of putting it out there for them a little bit, but not forcing it on them where it's like, hey, are you like, you might like cars, you might not.
Right.
But it's definitely one of the most awesome things out there. Obviously, you know, anyone that I've given these books to people before, you know, when people do baby showers and stuff like that, where it's like, oh, we want books. I've usually give them this. And everyone's like, oh, man, it's awesome. I love it. You know, the babies love it. She's even got, you know, her little Fast Kids Club onesie and stuff like that. So, but yeah, they're great. I would definitely, if you got a child, you need this in your life.
That's why we have it as the starter set.
It is. It's awesome.
Start your kids' life with knowing about cars.
It's funny you say that, right? Because today, the wife sends me a picture, and it's the baby sitting there in a group of friends at daycare holding a little monster truck. And the babysitter's like, yeah, look at your daughter. She was like, out of all the toys she had, she went and picked the monster truck. She's like, I blame her dad for this. So and it's like, that's 100% true story.
So not only do you work at CLM, but you also have a business, right?
Yeah. So in end of 2020, I started a ceramic bearing business for like motorsports applications. So I had been building this stuff for some time now, since maybe like 16, 17. Again, nothing new technology wise. It's been out there for years. It's very big in the industrial and machinery world, electric motor world. You know, Teslas come with ceramic bearings in them in certain spots. But yeah, I had been building some stuff for Hondas and Evos, and I was kind of selling it through some different people. But it was one of those things where it was never really like my own thing. I would just kind of do it on the side. And, you know, and the guy I deal with, my supplier, he's like, man, he's like, you know, you should start your own thing. He had been telling me since I started dealing with him, like, you should start your own thing. You should start your own thing. He's been in business for like going on close to 30 years now. And I'm always like, I didn't want to be bothered with it. But then it got to a point where I'm like, there's so much more to this market that like, we're not really even tapping into it. Like, we're doing mostly Hondas and like an Evo here and there. So then I kind of started looking into it a little bit more. I was like, you know what? Kind of sat down, started getting some stuff together, registered some domain names, business name, did everything, kind of started getting everything together, probably like August or so of 2020, and then we officially launched like towards the tail end of 2020. So a company's called Pro Bearing, do ceramic wheel bearings, transmission bearings, basically anything that has a ball bearing in it, we could usually put a ceramic ball in it. So we started doing that, and it's been great. Honestly, it's been keeps me busy for sure. Had some really good success. We got, you know, World's Fastest Evo has our stuff in it. We've had our products and cars that compete in the 24 Hours of Daytona. We've had cars and parts in I would say 99%, just because I'm not 100% sure on like a handful of cars, but every all-motor Honda runs our stuff. Just about 80% of the sport front-wheel drive class runs our stuff in one capacity or another. Like I said, world's fastest Evo. We've done stuff for Time Attack cars. We got a couple Evos in the Time Attack world that are kicking ass and doing well with our stuff. Same thing with some Hondas. But yeah, what started off as just mostly Honda Acura stuff. Now we do, you know, Audi, Mercedes, Porsche, basically you name it. We can probably do something for it. At bare minimum wheel bearings. We got stuff for GTRs now. But yeah, our catalog's grown pretty big. We're still, you know, relatively small in the sense, like I don't have a website even yet, like kind of word of mouth more. Just kind of don't want to bite off more than I can chew, you know? And our product is still somewhat custom. So a lot of orders I kind of got to facilitate, like, hey, like, what are you using for this gear set? What spindle do you have on the car? So we can make sure we get you the right parts once. You know, I've shipped stuff all over the world. I got stuff in New Zealand, Australia, Dubai, Bahrain. I got some of these hill climb trucks. Got like a couple Nissan Patrols over there running our stuff. Like, we've done some pretty high-end stuff. Like, there's certain things we can't post about or show you, but rest assured that there's a lot of fast guys that are running our stuff that will tell you they are not.
That's good. So is that, like, custom?
Basically, yeah. Some stuff is custom. Some stuff some of our more high-volume stuff I order already done. So I could buy it right from the factory, tell them, hey, I want this wheel bearing with these balls, these ceramic balls, these low-friction seals. You know, this grease, and they'll build it to us because we buy it in pretty high volume. But some other stuff, like if you call me, like I did wheel bearings for Chevy Impala, where it's like, hey, I want wheel bearings for Chevy Impala. I'm going to build those to order because that's not something I stock. You know, most of the Honda, Mitsubishi stuff, I have that on the shelf. When it comes to, you know, more of the oddball things,
one-offs,
usually on average, I quote 2 to 3 weeks. A lot of times it's like 1 to 2 weeks realistically, you know, like I shipped some stuff out today and guy was like, oh man, that's awesome. Like I wasn't expecting it. And I was like, you know, I'm a firm believer in under promising and over delivering. So usually, you know, that's what I try to do when it comes to that stuff. But yeah, we've been good, you know, going on another, it's going to be our fourth year
now,
just about. So, but yeah, it's kind of, you know, it was weird starting a business during the pandemic, but it actually worked out pretty well. So.
Congrats on that.
We got a lot of great customers out there, great racers, even streetcar guys that run our stuff. So definitely, it's been cool.
So how do our listeners get a hold of you if they want some bearings?
Pro Bearing on Instagram, probearingusa@gmail.com. We have a phone number. But yeah, Instagram, Facebook, all our contact information is there. I have a phone number. You know, pretty good about getting back to people fairly quick. So if you don't get a hold of me, rest assured, I will get back to you within, you know, usually within the hour a lot of times.
That's good. So, I was going to say today.
Yeah, no, usually it's within the hour. And I was trying to be very firm about, you know, not answering phone calls on the weekends and messages and stuff. But
if it comes through and when
you're on social media, the message pops up, you're like, let me see if I can make the sale.
Yeah.
You know, I was writing an invoice out to a guy on Christmas Eve, you know, for a set of wheel bearings. So. You know, sometimes you got to do what you got to do.
So we're about halfway into the year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we just kicked off the season. You know, what's 2024 look, the rest of 2024 look for you?
Right now, obviously, you know, we ran our 7. So that was, you know, something checked off the list. You know, next couple races coming up, we have Pan Am, which is going to be Maple Grove. And then we have H Day in New Hampshire. Fall Nationals, World Cup, you know, World Cup is kind of, we're going to see where we fit in this year with,
they're doing some rule changes.
So yeah, they're doing some
class changes.
They're doing some restructuring because we obviously see it. We go to these events. There's a lot of carnage at these events. It's the end of the year. It's cold out. Cars are making more power than they ever do. Track conditions are very tricky. So the way you got to run these cars usually results in carnage. So they're trying to minimize the carnage, the downtime, all that stuff. So they're restructuring where they got rid of Mean Street because that class kind of got way faster than what it was intended to be. So, and they're splitting up what used to be Super Street. Super Street's going to be gone now, which is the class we race, which is like, you know, all-wheel drive, front-wheel drive, rear-wheel drive combinations, like high 7 second class to a low 8 second class. Because the front-wheel drive guys were getting their ass kicked the last couple of years because these domestics can go 760, 770s, letting go of a button one after another, after another, after another. They don't break. And the front-wheel drive cars, to run those numbers, they don't stay together. So I think they saw that. So they're restructuring the classes where front-wheel drive is going to have its own class this year. So it's basically going to be like X front-wheel drive, sport front-wheel drive that gets contested all over the country all year is going to be its own class. They're going to create a class called Limited Street now, which is all-wheel drive, rear-wheel drive stuff. Mm. And Mean Street's going to be gone and Super Street's going to be gone. So now it's going to be all motor, front-wheel drive, and then Limited Street. And then the rest of the classes, I believe, are staying the same. By some of the wording out there of some of the posts I've seen and some of the press things that have been put out about the event and the new classes, I would not be surprised if the front wheel drive class is invitational because it's kind of trending that way. I think, you know, Jason and Miller Brother Productions, they're at the point now where they're kind of trying to filter out the once a year racers because the once a year racers are usually the ones that come out and there's carnage. Because, you know, let's face it, guys just don't have their shit together. You know, there's guys that
swinging for the fences,
they like dust their cars off once a year. They go out there, they swing for the fence. You know, you might stick one every now and then, but those other five or six that didn't stick usually result in breakage or downtime.
Yeah.
And they're just getting to the point where they're trying to minimize that. And I also think by like restructuring and doing all this, you're going to cut down on the amount of cars that are actually going to be there by a couple. So that's also going to be a plus because you've all been to World Cup. There's no space left because nowadays everyone shows up. It's a truck, it's a trailer, it's an RV. So now the pits are just way too packed. So I think by doing this, you might get rid of a couple cars too. And I think that'll actually help. It'll be good in the long run, I think. So, you know, I know it's a little controversial right now. Some guys feel like, oh, you know, like I'm never going to be able to compete at World Cup and stuff like that. I'm like, listen, like, and Jason Miller says it all the time. He's like, World Cup is for the best of the best. And I've even said it myself. Like last year, I got in on the waiting list because I didn't make the cut for the first tier and the class sold out. And I said it. I've always said it. If my car doesn't make the cut, then I don't deserve to be there. I'm okay accepting that, but some people are not. You know, I've gone. There was 1 year we didn't qualify. We had just a bad year and didn't a bad race. We didn't qualify. But for the most part, since 2010, there's been 1 year that we didn't qualify. Every other year we've qualified. So we've gone a couple rounds here and there. It's a tough event. You know, the track conditions definitely make it hard on our type of cars. So you know, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. You know, I'm sure. At the end of the day, you know, I did kind of the thing you're not supposed to do. I started reading some of the comments on these posts and it's literally, you cannot please everybody. Like some guys are like, this is great. Some guys are like, man, I'm never going to be able to race there again. This is ridiculous. It's the Honda's fault. Some guys are like, you know what? When that class comes up, that's for me to go to the stands, go get food. Like, hey, listen, to each his own, you know, some guys do that during the pro mod classes because they don't care about it.
Yeah.
You know, so
that's what it is.
But it's one of those things. I'm sure once the event gets put on and get ran, I'm sure everyone will kind of, when they're there, they're going to forget about all the drama.
Yep.
Off topic. I'm looking at Ricky's shoes and I'm so mad because at the Christmas party this year, my shits fell apart.
Well, that's what you get for not wearing them.
You all hear a funny story. So obviously, you guys, you know, Tony's a good friend of your guys, sold out, right? Jersey City.
Yep.
So my wife one time, she found out, cause she used to work around where his old shop used to be in Highland Park. So she bought stuff from there a couple times for me. So at one time, he posted some shoes and it was infrared sixes. And she knew I wanted them. So she messaged him, hey, I want those. I'm going to come get them. I don't know what she paid. I know it was probably like somewhere $500-$600, something like that. Expensive. They were dead stock, damn, brand new. So I wore them once. I left, you know, where I used to live in the town I lived in by Valenza. I literally lived around the corner. I walked to Valenza, walked back, and they fell apart. Like literally, like the souls were coming apart. And Tony felt bad. He's like, dude, he's like, I didn't know. He's like, I didn't think it was going to be like that. He's like, also, I wouldn't have sold them to you because I know you actually wear your stuff. So I ended up trading them like straight up. I'm like, listen, put them up. See if anyone will trade them for a brand new pair of Infrared 6s, the new ones, like the re-release. Because these were original, like with the Nike on them, everything like from, you know, the early 2000s or whatever. So I ended up getting a pair like that. So I feel your pain on sneakers falling apart. Because I'm like, man, I was like, I was so happy as a Christmas gift. Wore them once. Never again. That's literally funny. Soles are falling apart. Like, Tony, what happened? He's like, oh, man, you know, it happens sometimes. I'm like, you know what? Same for me. Just get rid of them. I'll just get. Man.
Where are your sneakers?
Yeah, for sure.
Well, thank you, Ricky, for coming to the new studio and being on the podcast.
Appreciate it. I appreciate you guys having me and letting me ramble about my life.
As usual, how we end it, make sure you follow us on all our social media. Eat, Sleep, Race on Facebook, Fast Kids Club, Facebook, Instagram, Frankie5ESR, HugoESR.
RickyCLM on Instagram, Facebook, and then if you want to follow Pro Bearing and CLM Motorsports on Instagram, Facebook, pretty much everywhere. And make sure you give Competition Clutch and McLeod a follow also.
Plug.
We're out of here.
Peace.